Welcome to Sonic Artifacts, offering the best deals and interesting finds in affordable vintage music equipment in Los Angeles and New York City. This week on our interview series, we sit down with August Grabosch, founder of Otis Amps. Dedicated to building custom compact amplifiers, Otis Amps are made by hand in beautiful Kauai, Hawaii. This is your host, Brian Chalemi, signing in from LA.
And your co-host, Max Braun, coming in from Brooklyn.
August, thank you so much for coming on the show. How are you doing today?
Good, good. How are you guys? Thanks so much for having me.
We are good.
Yeah, for sure. So beautiful Kauai, Hawaii, man. Are you Hawaiian? Like, how's life down in Hawaii?
I'm not Hawaiian at all. No. but, you know, the people are pretty cool if they pick up on that, you know, you're here to, like, just give a little and not take. Well, you know, so that it's a – I'm definitely not Hawaiian, right? But – yeah, it affects you. Do you know what I mean? Because like everyone here sort of treats the place like it's alive, you know, like the Mother Earth stuff's really there and like the mud gets into your feet and stuff like that. So it does sort of have this, there's a togetherness here that I haven't experienced in many places, and it's kind of like its own little country. So I'm very happy with the vibe here. And you know, I teach at the community college, so it's been really awesome to work with these young people. They're pretty cool.
What do you teach?
I teach drawing, art history, and like, you know, sometimes painting, things like that. I'll teach anything, man. I'm that guy. I take the cash, big or small. You know.
Well, I see you're sitting in the shop right now. You got some cabinets behind you. You have a beautiful amplifier. The Trudeau, is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, the Trudeau, yeah.
Is that like the prime minister?
Yeah, I get asked that a lot, you know, and there was like a minute there where he was kind of in trouble for some stuff. And I was like, ooh, I'll just be quiet for a week or two, you know?
Yeah, was that an Aladdin costume he did or something?
I don't know. I intentionally did not pay attention. I have a habit of doing that. It's named after General Arthur Trudeau, who supposedly seeded alien UFO technology in places like Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, you know, basically outside of the government because, you know, to insulate it, you know, from, I guess, you know, just to keep it secret in that kind of way. You know, even if that's all bogus, which I think it's true. But if it is bogus, he did like a lot of cool stuff. He was part of the charge of Pork Chop Hill, and he did a lot for diversity and inclusion in the military. So I was just like, this guy seems pretty cool, in general, you know, even if the UFO stuff's not real. I had a smaller model. I was going to name the Corso off, Philip Corso, who wrote The Day After Roswell, right? And, Sir, I think that's how you pronounce that company.
Yeah.
They had a little mini head that said Corso, and it had radius corners like I do. So I was like, what the heck? You know, I wonder if we're on the same wavelength.
Yeah, they're thinking the same thing. So that's a pretty cool theme for future models. I like that, you know, way to name them.
Yeah, I do that all the time. And, you know, I have like models that I haven't released that, you know, or I already have named. It's just like I've only sent out like three or four of them, and I'm making sure they're. I started the company like kind of on a whim, you know. I got sick of my mailman job, and I think in a lot of ways I wasn't necessarily prepared for what was going to happen, like showing up at NAMM with this product. And so now I'm like really making sure it's right. I think maybe I swung a little bit too far in that direction because like I'm dragging a little, and I think it's time to release one or two things. But yeah, I mean, they're all that. But you know, for me, it was like subliminal. I don't want to use the word activism, but it's like that kind of thing. Like usually if you go and you start running your mouth about UFOs and you sound all impassioned or whatever, it shuts people down. But if you're going to be in the Fretboard Journal bench press thing and you drop a line, you know, you can kind of like, it's more subliminal, you know, because a lot of people have their minds made up on all sorts of stuff, you know? So
no, for sure. And it's a subtle way to start bringing it into the consciousness, really.
Yeah. But now it's not needed because, well, UFOs are real.
Yeah. No, confirmed.
Wait, what are they? They don't call them UFOs. What, UAE or what is it?
UAPs. Yeah. UAP. And you know, that's not even a new term. So like, I geeked out pretty hard when I saw that being used, because I took it as like, oh, this is breadcrumbs. I don't think it actually was, but I went and like went through my old books and I was like, where have I heard UAP before? And basically there was like a version of MUFON prior to MUFON that had that term in there. But John Keel is an author who does a lot of writing, and you know, he kind of like is a little he's a little slippery. Like it's hard to tie him down to like what that guy actually believes. But when that UAP stuff came out and I started rereading his stuff or reading more of it, and then some of the stuff they talk about where they dip their toe in the water and then pull out, it lines up with a lot of that guy's stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's a way to take away from the original name and not really say that it's real in a way for the narrative.
I like UFO, dude. Like, I'm going to say UFO all the time because I think about all the people that, like, I never talked much about it. You know what I mean? But like, I think of all the people that like came out and like said, yo, this happened to me, this, that, and the other thing. And everyone rolled their eyes or ridiculed them. And I don't blame the government for doing that, because there is no way to keep that stuff secret. You had to make a joke out of it. There's no way to keep it locked down. You know, so many people talk about it that you had to make it like silly. I think it's just kind of crazy how UFOlogy is just sort of disintegrating, because it's just like it's being forced into becoming just regular factual stuff to talk about. I think the main hiccup, I guess, is like the stigma's gone about saying they're real or that you believe in them, but it sure as hell isn't gone if you say you've seen stuff or you've right. seen little gray aliens and stuff like that. So I think that hopefully is addressed at some point, because
people need to see photos. I mean, I guess they have, like you said, they have real photos, but have you been selling more amplifiers since this has come out, the truth?
No. And I don't know if talking about it on your podcast is going to help, but I'm not a big fan of self-censorship. You know what I mean? Like in Kauai, like I was talking to one of my students, and he has a friend that's like a huge artist, and I'm not going to name him because I don't know if I can share this, but he's like he's the shit, right? He's objectively awesome. And he went into like all these galleries and like the touristy area trying to get his work in there, and they shut him down. And it's just like, oh, because it's not like overtly super duper Hawaiian. You know what I mean? Even though the guy grew up here, went to high school here, it has Hawaiian blood. And, you know, that kind of thing where it's so important. And it's such like, it's so what's the word for it? Culturally significant, sacred, that it almost oppresses people from doing anything else, you know? So that, you know, for me, if I'm like, oh, I don't want to talk about this because someone's not going to buy my amps or whatever, I'm just like, I don't want their money.
Yeah. Right, not, right.
I know that kind of sounds like complete nonsense or whatever, but it's not, because I've always had trouble keeping up with demand. You know, it's hard for me to build these things. So if anything, I can like do a better website now, instead of like, yeah. You know, kind of just being obscure.
You did all yourself? Is this all hand built? It looks like you use NOS resistors, NOS capacitors, which is a unique thing. Most people don't do that.
Yeah, it's more testing, and you have to know like which ones don't suck. Most things that say Mylar are great. You still want to test them, but you know, people slip up. For instance, like they'll use like Cornell Dubilier Black Cats, and those aren't. If they're in some place without voltage, then fine. But no, those aren't going to do it. But the green ones are great. And, you know, you have to know the difference between like the codes PKM versus PM. PM's good. You can buy PMs all the time. But the thing is like some of the stuff about my amps, like I started 5 years ago. So a lot of the new product has caught up. Like when I started, I'd crack open a resistor from like, whoever makes the new carbon comps, and it just was a joke. Now they're pretty good. So I definitely keep doing it because I still think they're better, right? But it's also just not to be wasteful. Like that for me, I don't like the thought of like making something that ends up thrown away. So part of me doing it by myself is like, it kind of goes back to hippie alien stuff, where I believe I can imbue power into something. If your circuit sucks, your circuit sucks, you know, like you have to do math. But like, I do think if you bring a positive intention and all that stuff, and I know I'm not the only one that does this. I've read it on other people's write-ups where they're like whispering into what they're making and stuff. But no, I'm not like saying Van Halen every time I like make an amp, but you know what I'm saying, right? Like,
I feel like there's something to be said. I've heard amp builders, they build 10 in a row and one sounds the best, but it's all the same parts. How is that even possible? I think there's some sort of energy when something connects in a way. Like, how is that, you know, you went on the website, you ordered all the same parts. How is one better than the rest? You know what I mean?
There can be, yeah. I mean, there's other reasons for it. I mean, the amount of, just like, okay, the output section, right? If it's not perfectly matched, say the two tubes, you didn't take the time to like really match that output section, it will sound flubby and it'll be junky, you know, with like a couple milliamps different in current. So there are ways for it to change, but I definitely have made like maybe two amps at the same time. And like one just sounded amazing for some reason. So yeah, it's not mutually exclusive, right? Both sides of it. I do think there's something there. And coming, you know, from teaching art history and stuff, like you read the Sumerians, you read some of the ancient, not ancient art, but I forget what it's called. It's not Ghanaians, but they make like they look like Kachina dolls, but they're from Africa. And they have people like stab them and like hit them to awaken it. And then they make contracts in front of them. But I like that kind of stuff. Like when I look at old civilizations, like I think some people look at them through a lens of primitivism, but I think it's wrong to assume that they're primitive to begin with, or there is such a thing as primitive. Cause like even the Mayans like had a good sense of aesthetics, right? They picked the prettiest people to kill. They had nice knives. They made nice paintings of like their fingers ripped out. So, you know, for their respective culture, they were pretty sophisticated. So when they say those things, like you can imbue power into something, I don't know if it's true or not, but I'm going to try. Yeah. Whatever to get the edge, you know?
Yeah. Why not?
Is why I still use NLS stuff and why I just keep reading and trying to get better. And, you know, you just keep trying to make the best product you can. It's that illusion of progress too. I don't know if it's better or not. I think it is, but it keeps me motivated. Cause when you're doing something by yourself, like you get real tired of podcasts, you get tired of music, you get tired of, you know, you really have to like zen out, you know what I mean? It's like being a gardener in that kind of way. And sometimes it's great to like go up on the hill and like look at what you grew, but a lot of it is just like, I don't know. You're just there. It's really, really kind of funny.
Yeah, no, I imagine. I mean, it's a very, you know, solo mission, you know, I'm in the shop all day, every day. Now these are 12 watt amplifiers. Your tube complement is pretty interesting as well, I thought.
Yeah. I mean, the tube complement is, I mean, there's differences between it and like 6V6s, but they're, it's like the difference, nothing that can't be tweaked. Right. So like you could put an adapter in and throw 6V6s and they'd work pretty good. I got really inspired by this magnetone amp at Big Fish Studios. And I forget where that actually is. It's like inland, North County. That inspired me. And it had 6973s, which again, super amps really inspired me. And at the time that I was getting going, like I had this hobby and I was into electronics and I was making stuff and these companies were coming back, right? And I had decided to like do this and they were coming back. And then when they came back, they were really good. Like I have nothing bad to say about those amps, but they're not necessarily like the old ones, which is for a reason because they weren't like, their stuff's good, but like I still kind of kept going down that route of, I guess, looking at junky, weird circuits, finding oddball amps. And a lot of the times, you know, just seeing what sounds cool and why it sounds cool and then throwing it together. That's about it. I had a mentor too, who like really made it safe and easy. So I cheated, you know, that guy helped me out big time. And as long as I brought him like a six pack of beer, like he was going to fix it. And then I could go home and see what I did wrong. So, that helped out a big time.
That's amazing. That's amazing. Cool. Was that in Hawaii or was that back in the US?
No, there's one dude in Hawaii that like does it out of a storage container and like never wears a shirt. Saves a bunch of money. But
were there other builders that you've met within Hawaii?
No, I mean, building here sucks. I love it, you know what I mean? But at the same time, like I had to be really careful with humidity. And I don't make like acoustic guitars, but in some ways the wood amps like have some of those elements. So like learning the hard way about relative humidity when you've been using veneer and then you start using all this koa, there is a learning curve. So I have to like pay attention to the humidity in the room. I got to dry wood. I got to make sure if I'm veneering that the birch is in the same room as the koa. So, you know, they somewhat can coexist when they're veneered together. So like I got, it's not here. It's at my other, where it's at home. Like I got a 16 month old. So I try to like do the wiring and stuff at home. So I'm around. But yeah, one dude, I'm like redoing a head for him because it just like cracked in half. So, you know, I had to learn, you know, that part was tough, but no one builds on Kauai for the most part, unless it's ukuleles. Definitely no amp builders. I think I'm technically the westernmost amp builder in all of America.
There you go. We're happy to have you on the show.
Yeah. That's...
Well, I know Aero Pickups is out of Hawaii. You know them?
No, I've never heard of them, but I'm going to look them up. Is it spelled like the archery
A-E-R-O.
Arrow? Okay. Like aeroplane or the...
Yeah, they do designer. A really good Music Master bass like replacement swap. One of the few people that... They were the first ones that did it years ago, and now other people offer it, but...
So they've been around a while.
Yeah, probably, I would say at least 8 years. Yeah.
It's longer than me. I should know who they are.
Yeah, they're only open a few days a week. I could remember from the website. And I remember I saw they were in Hawaii. I was like, man, I bet they're chilling.
I will say that musicians here are dope. You know, they're great. Like, I think Marty Friedman grew up here. I don't know if anyone's a Megadeth fan, but like, Marty Friedman's the shit, right? So he grew up in Hawaii. There's good musicians. A lot of reggae. So yeah, that's not my bag.
The beach vibes, you know?
Yeah.
What's do you do a lot of repairs and things like that as well on the side?
I did. And then it took like 3 months to fix everything that was broken on this little island. So that was it.
Everything works.
Yeah. Lots of mesas. The humidity is not kind to things out here. And like for me, like I get stuff out. So when I'm done with the amp or whatever, I ship it. Yeah. And again, I have like a room with a humidifier going, not a humidifier, a dehumidifier going like all the time. And it's like solar powered, so I don't feel too bad about it. But I guess the thing is repairs are cool. But with the college job and this, I learned enough from what, like, it's good. Like, repairing things is awesome when you're getting going because you learn so much. You don't have to, like, buy amps to do this, like, R&D. Stuff comes through, and you check it out. And, you know, you even learn more when it's the second one because then you're, like, really sure. You have, like, another point of reference to a different example. And so you really kind of understand what it was the first time through. But, yeah, I did most of that stuff in Northern California. And then I was in Southern California for a year before I got this job in Kauai. And I've always sort of been back and forth on whether to go full time with Otis. But I really like working with young people. And before I got a master's, you know, I didn't teach special ed. I was a behavioral assistant. And I did like YMCA stuff, you know? So I like young people. I remember what it's like to be that young and sort of be getting going with your life. So, yeah, it pays pretty good. It's a nice check when you have a wife and kid. So this stuff is the two together. I mean, it feels like everyone needs two jobs nowadays, right? Just like with the way it's going. But the two together is it kind of combines. It's fulfilling. I feel pretty lucky. Like it's not a bummer to teach art. So
yeah, that's it. Great. And you can build at your leisure in a way and don't have to go too insane.
Yeah. And I also, you know, I didn't make it as a painter or someone that drew, you know, not to knock it. Like I still make paintings and drawings and stuff. And, I'm eager to like do a show again or whatever, but, the entrepreneurship side of things, being adaptable. Like art, I think, is valuable for a lot of reasons, some of which we don't necessarily understand. And it's that part of it is satisfying to be able to have something that, like, okay, I pivoted naturally and I started making money in that kind of way. So the students kind of seem to appreciate it a little bit. So it's not a bad gig also in combination for how my students view it, I guess.
How did you pick Kauai? Because of the job?
Yeah. Also, my parents are here and they're old.
Oh, okay.
So that's...
How did your parents pick it?
You know, my dad's pretty rad. So he's one of those dudes that he left at like 13 to the seminary and he got kicked out. I think he snuck out to see the Beatles or something like that. But he was going to become a priest and he was just trying to get out of the house because he was the oldest out of eight. But he was really good with his money. And I didn't know, like, I grew up and I never got like new clothes for school. I wasn't poor. Like, I was never worried about like eating or something like that, but I definitely didn't, I wasn't like able to get things. Do you know what I mean? Like when I got a guitar, I was like, oh crap, that actually happened. I asked for something and it happened. And a lot of gifts were shared between my brother and I. So it was a surprise to me that when he retires, he's able to buy this place in Kauai, you know, and my brother broke his arm in the military or got injured or something. So he was in Honolulu and my parents went out there to help him out and just, you know, see the place. And they fell in love with it and now they farm. So they farm and I help out with that and, you know, a little bit here and there. And it's just, yeah. I mean, for me, I'm always going to want to be around my parents a little bit just to help out. I'm pretty family oriented in that way. So I don't know why they picked Kauai. If you go to all the islands, they do have totally different vibes. And Kauai, I think, well, you guys are from New York, right? So my dad's from East Islip and he's from East Islip a long time ago, you know? So I think there's similarity. Well, I know there's similarities, but I didn't visit East Islip like, you know, 6 years ago or whatever it was. But you know, you don't pay for parking here. Like they're not going to put parking meters up because you're not going to charge native Hawaiians to park on their island. Do you know what I mean? So it is old school in that way. And it does have a certain charm to it. Like you really do feel like you're in an old movie and people are really nice, look really nice, spectacular people. And there's something special about it. It does have its financial challenges. Like it's really hard to get by here. And for that reason, like I don't take deposits. I just like take names because like, I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I'm one dude. I want to deliver, you know, I don't want to like have to be worried about having someone's money or that kind of thing when it's up and down all the time, which I really worked out in my favor because COVID showed up and I was like, well, thank God I'm caught up with most things.
Yeah, imagine the supply chain getting things in and out of Hawaii. Either way is expensive, let alone after COVID and everything. So what's that been like?
A lot of, you know, if I go visit my in-laws, I'm packing a suitcase full of stuff. But I think Otis Amps working in Hawaii and Kauai or whatever is completely contingent on the U.S. Postal Service's flat rate boxes still working. So if that goes down and I want to keep doing Otis, I'm not going to be here. Because things like transformers and stuff like that, like they have to be in a flat rate box. Otherwise you're looking at insane amounts. The other thing, and I feel kind of like apprehensive to say this, but things are rigged for locals. So when I ship things FedEx from Hawaii, it's a negligible increase from when I shipped them in LA. So like you wouldn't think that, you know, but they got ground rates from Kauai. And you're like, wow. Like, that doesn't make sense, right?
That's crazy. I mean, that's, yeah, it's so far away. I think it'd be super expensive. But so going in or getting out of Hawaii to America, they charge regular ground rates.
It's weird. There was just enough stuff here for me to keep doing this. Like, I was worried about boxes. Luckily, I'm kind of like, you know, a little sustainable, this, that, and the other thing. So I go to Ace Hardware and they got like repack boxes and I find like old insulation. Like the Pink Panther stuff, sand them down, make like a box within a box. And no one's commented on my weird packing because I pack really well. But it was one of those things, like coming here was kind of like, you just like when you had the opportunity, you know, I had a place to sort of jump off, like a jump start with my parents, you know, it's hard to pass it up. It was difficult to think like, this isn't a good idea, because it's a really nice place and people are happy. And so far we don't have a lot of the problems that I experienced in other places. So people generally are kind-willed and mean the best. And that's about it. I'm not trying to say it's all good, but for the most part, my experiences have been very positive.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. That's awesome. How many guitar stores are there? Is there a lot of guitar stores? Big chains, small shops? Like, what's the vibe?
Okay. I think there's three. There's one in Hanalei, which if anyone's thinking about coming to Hawaii, you got to go to Hanalei Bay. That's like pretty amazing. And there's, I don't know what to call it, but there's a little shopping area that kind of feels like LA's Chinatown. And there's like a record store in there that has some guitar stuff. And every once in a while you'll see like a 50s junior. There's a place called Scotty's across from Walmart. So you got a Walmart, and then across from there, Scotty's Music. And then there's Kalaheo Strings and Things, which is mostly ukuleles, but that's like down the street from where I'm at. So I'm able to just cruise on down there for picks or strings. So it's not totally inconvenient, but I mean, it's not LA. It's not, you guys are in New York, right? So you have like,
yeah, I'm in LA and he's in New York. So
yeah. So you guys have, what is it? Southside Guitars, Rivington Guitars.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a bunch. I mean, Main Drag.
There's more than I know about.
30th Street, right? Yeah, 30th Street has stuff. Yeah.
Ludlow, or there was Ludlow.
Retro Fret. Yeah.
The Staten Island one. I forget what that's called, but you take the ferry and you got a Kentucky Hut right there, and then you got.
Yeah, yeah. I think that one closed. I think.
Was it Mandolin Brothers?
Yeah.
I love that place. And across the street was like a Simpsons bar.
Your amps, they look like heads, but the speaker, it's an 8-inch speaker in there. Is that always the look? I mean, it looks, you know, really cool with the, you know, the koa wood, obviously native to Hawaii, correct?
Yeah. I try not to use too much though. It's like a veneer, you know what I mean? It actually came from, I think it was on 30th Street. There's like a place to rehearse, right? There's a rehearsal studio like right there.
Funkadelic
plays there?
I think the place was called Funkadelic Studios.
I don't remember. It kind of had a pretty safe name.
Okay. But,
you know, I was visiting with my mentor, Skip Simmons, right? That guy pretty much helped me get going, who does that Truth About Vintage Amps podcast.
Oh, yeah, yeah, Skip. Yeah, yeah, awesome.
Yeah, so that guy helped me out. Love that guy. Skip's the best. But pretty much... I was at his shop, you know, and I'd bring these like homebrew things over and I'd screw something up. Like, I think sometimes he's talked about someone like misreading the color code and like accidentally turning the amp off. That was me for sure. So for anyone out there that's trying to learn or whatever, you know, we all start someplace, right? He had like a little Silvertone amp that was like a radio, and I just was never satisfied when I was going to practice, and I would wanted something that was, that had, you know, that practice speaker for New York, but I could carry on the subway. And that was the general idea of it. And then of course I saw like, okay, there's been ideas like this previous to mine. And I looked at some of the 30s designs that were like coming out of Chicago that were sort of like PAs, like multiple input, weird, you know, like no name stuff. And I took a lot of inspiration from those, and things just sort of kind of came together with what I had. So for instance, like that back panel on the, sorry, I got like wood dust in my hair. So the back panel on the back of the amp is like to cover up the Tolexing on those radius corners. And that was like, just like a, what the hell do I do here? Because I don't like the pizza cutting to do that. So, you know, it just kind of came together. The first amps were literally, I got like a Harbor Freight, like right angle press, and just like shielded the crap out of two pieces of a wood, and then just slid in like one little right angle thing. So I got all those back and like gave people real chassis, but definitely, you know, I had no money. when I started it, and definitely like filled up a credit card and all that stuff to try to get it going. And, but yeah, so that was it. It was New York. It was things like that. And the aesthetic, honestly, like.
You have a design drawing background. It's very clear. It's very beautiful work.
Thanks. I mean, it's not super original. Like there's lots of things like that, that had like a speaker offset to the left and a chassis, you know, it's not, but I guess like what I can say is the one benefit of maybe a little bit of the art school stuff in terms of amps is you start noticing how much structure depicts content. And for me, everything looks like something else, you know, in amp world, it's like this type of this, this type of that. And it's for a reason because they had to go on tour and stuff. And for me, I really wanted to focus on, you know, what is this going to look like? And I think being kind of broke at the time and like have, and being in a place like Chico where I could drive up to a carpenter and be like, hey, I want to do this corner thing. Like, I don't know how to do it. And hand them like a 12 pack of Sierra Nevada and then help me, you know, that was very beneficial to be in that kind of small weirdo town, where people had 10, 15 minutes and weren't always like, trying to make money all the time. So that was very, beneficial, I guess, for me to be in that area to get going.
You know, as you were saying, you know, your designs aren't necessarily completely original, but obviously there's a taste. And I believe you said form dictates content, I think.
Structure. Yeah. So what I'm trying to say by that is like, okay, everyone's going on tour. Everything has to be this loud. It's all going to look the same. It's like the same, like, let's just take social media. Like Instagram is going to be less of a negative place than Twitter because it's more, you know, about pictures. Whereas Twitter is like, you have to say something witty and snarky to like get retweeted or whatever. So when I'm making the stuff, I'm thinking in terms of that a little bit, that I knew I wasn't going to take down, I didn't even know much about the boutique amp competition, right? But I knew I wasn't going to like take down Vox, right? Or wasn't going to outsell Fender. So I was always thinking, I guess, like, well, there's always going to be these things and I'm better off if it's like, oh, I have this and I have an Otis. And I wanted to make sure, you know, I was at least stealing from things that were outside of musical equipment. Not that I'm totally original, but I borrowed from places that, you know.
Right, outside of the amp world.
Yeah, yeah. That was like, I'm trying to not sound like, I don't want to sound like I'm putting anything down. You know what I mean? Because.
No, it's just what you did. Everyone's got their own journey, their own angle. You know what I mean?
And like, yeah, because like the stuff's amazing. Like, yeah, I have, there's a lot of people I really admire, and that's part of the fun of building this stuff. But yeah, for me, I think I was always trying to sidestep a little bit in order to hopefully have a niche, and that was it.
No, it's interesting. All the people we interview, they all have a unique niche. Nobody's ever trying to out Fender, like you say. No one's ever trying to outdo Vox. Oh, you always got to go different.
Fender's an awesome company. So I feel bad saying this, but like, I really do think it's in the best interest of the smaller companies to not necessarily beat up each other, but to try to band together and beat up Fender, you know, or like a bigger company. Like you want people to go there, and we aren't in a vacuum. You know, if I'm slow and I take too long on a turnaround and I'm a boutique company, that's going to affect other sales. You know, so you want to do a good job, you want to have your stuff together and things like that. So it is, I see it as a positive, you know, if you're in the same, it's symbiotic, you know, it's the same as like 90s punk rock coming up. There is a lot of bands. It wasn't just Green Day, right? So it can help because I don't know if, yeah, that like Rancid got a career because of the Offspring and Green Day. They probably still would have had a career, but you know,
No, it's a part of a bigger movement, a bigger wave. You're not just a drop in the bucket. You know, it's all building towards it in the culture, I think.
Yeah. So when someone does something awesome, it's good. It's good for everybody. When you see something that like is just, I mean, sometimes some of the stuff I see that's made, I'm just like, you could probably cure cancer, but that's a sick pedal, man. You know?
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pushing the boundaries, you know what I mean? Of the industry and the technology and, you know, the building community, which I like to say we're in a, you know, an aftermarket renaissance, really would be, like you said, the resistors are better than they were 5 years ago. Like they are pushing forward, and actually getting better.
Yeah. And that's, again, that's because companies are making great amps and providing good customer service and they're buying that stuff. So it's a good way to support it. And, one guy who's, I feel bad not mentioning because he's just amazing, is Sowers, Brian Sowers, who's doing output transformers now, but also makes amazing amps and just is like a really, really smart guy. Nice guy too. But I mean, people are always like, oh, is the output transformer original on this or whatever. I mean, that guy's nailing it. And then, you know, has the taste to talk to you very casually about what sort of stuff you like and just implement it and employ these different things. And he, I mean, I'd argue some of the stuff he sent me is just like superior. You know, he sent me some things. I'm just like, I would prefer this in an amp, you know, like, I mean, originality and stuff like that. That's I think it's fetishized to a certain extent, but you know, if you got like a player grade instrument or something and it's missing an output transformer, that guy's going to nail it. You know, don't go. Yeah. He's going to kill it. So you got people like that, you know, the capacitor versions of that. And it's nice. Nice group to be a part of.
You went to NAMM. When did you go to NAMM?
The NAMM in 2016. I was working as a mailman and I was selling amps. I just got laid off teaching a semester at Chico State. And I was just like, I'm a mailman now. And
Bukowski.
Yeah, Bukowski, exactly. That post office book, man, just haunted me while I was there. And it's true. They're all so, I mean, I don't want to rag on it because like, I don't want to rag on it because that is some people's lives. And I think it could have been pretty good for me. It's just, whatever was going on at that particular post office that time, really, you know, that's independent. Like, I don't want to look down on people, you know, or whatever, for their occupation. Cause you know, it's not like what makes them valuable. Like, you know, but the thing is someone died working at that place while I was there. And it's just, you know, the stress,
I guess.
No, I think it was like an accident or something. Like, that was part of what I really didn't like about it is it was like swept under the rug. It's like a, you know, and that made me feel really weird about it. And then especially when, at the time, like I know like Amazon packages and, I mean, I can't tell you how important it was when you had a postcard. Like that was like, that was insane. That was like castaway status where like you had to deliver those packages. Like you got a postcard because most of the time it felt like you hacked into someone's junk email, printed it out and threw it on their porch and ran away.
Pretty much.
But I did NAMM in 2016. I had a model. I had sold a few amps to friends, just like maybe 10. I sort of just snapped and I did it. And I met some really nice people that helped me out and they were just awesome and they didn't question what I was doing. And the one that really comes to mind is John Paterno, who's just like this awesome producer, engineer guy. And you could tell that that's his nature. Like I was in the back in the corner, like no one was coming there. And I worked at a Zumi, so I was kind of thankful that I had that skill set of like, hey man, you want to like add on these socks with that backpack? Like it totally works.
That's so funny.
So, you know, yeah, I really wanted to go. There's like a party with Zumi's called like 100K. If you sell $100,000, you get to like go snowboarding with Wee Man. So I was pretty,
That's real. That's real.
Swear to God.
Oh
swear
my
in my life.
God.
Wow.
Yeah. So, have a little bit of like compassion for those dudes and dudettes when they're trying to 3 for 20 tease you or whatever.
He's trying to get with Wee Man, you know.
Dude, it's all, I mean, I was close.
Close to snowboarding with Wee Man. Damn,
yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah.
Damn, so you made the leap, man. You set up your booth. You were in the back corner and this producer came over and you guys have since, it's been a good connection, I guess.
It's been a good connection, but not because I mean, the amps sort of just sold. I think they sold after you've been in business a while. Like, it did take a while for them to go, but after a second NAM, I pretty much had consistent interest. And, I think people are used to like young companies not knowing what they're getting into. And I was one of those. I just was like lucky and smart. And I was watching what other people were doing. And I had a few people like kind of warn me. So I didn't get in over my head and didn't screw up too badly. In business, I think any business is super important to protect your reputation, right? And if you take a bunch of deposits, like I said, I don't take deposits, and you know, take forever, and then like what, like that, you're just killing your company. So I was realistic about what I could do. And then not totally, like there's some stuff I got to finish, especially with the flood. Some stuff that I thought I was going to get out got mold. So like that cab back there is going to a dude that's been waiting a while, things like that, you know? So not perfect, but I think just hanging in there is the main thing. But the Paterno guy was someone that I could send an email to if I was having a difficult customer or something, and he'd talk me through it because he had done equivalent things with recording. This is his customer with some like a different type of client, but client's a client, right? So he was just there. But I mean, other companies had said certain things and maybe I didn't employ them immediately, but they hung in my brain long enough where I was like, oh, that's what that person was saying. And you'd be surprised because a lot of these people are really savvy businessmen. And for me, I was like, okay, I just got fired. I really want to do like an EP, right? I really want to go record again, but I should be like responsible, you know? I should like start this amp company that I've been working on, and then I'll have all this time to play guitar, which is complete bullshit, right? You know, you don't have any time. I've gotten like worse at guitar for sure, but it's still as an art form, it's awesome, you know? And the painting and drawing side of me and the music side of me kind of got put together, and it worked, and I'm satisfied with it in terms of, you know, the creative urges.
Where did the name Otis come from?
Oh, that's a fun story. So I lived by Bronx Pizza in San Diego, and my name is August, right? And I don't know the owner of that place, but I get the idea that he might like hire ex-convicts sometimes and help them like rehabilitate and things like that. So there was this dude, I don't want to name his name. It was a nickname anyways, but I don't know. I'm weird about that. And he's like, your name's August. And then that's a whatever name, insert whatever you want to call that. It means non-masculine, right? So he told me my name sucks, basically.
Cool. Can I get a cheese slice, please?
I like talking to people. Like I have those jobs, you know what I mean? So like, I like to connect on that level because it sucks when you're working those jobs and everyone only sees you as the thing in their way of the pizza. So, yeah, you know, I always chatted him up and stuff. But yeah, he was like, you know, man, your name, that's too close to autumn. So I'm going to call you Otis. And that was it. So the Bronx pizza guy nicknamed me Otis. No one else calls me Otis. And then, you know, just in terms of aesthetics and making logos, that was, that word worked. I mean, Gray Bosch amp sounds like crap. You know, not everyone has like a great last name. So, and my name's like fake. Anyways, it's like fake German to like avoid the Holocaust or whatever. I'm not like really Jewish or whatever, but like Polish, Jew, this, that, and the other thing, a mix of, you know, Serb and all that stuff. So like, I don't have like a huge attachment to my last name to begin with. Yeah, so that's where it came from. And obviously the associations with like the blues artists and stuff is nice. It's not why I named it that, but
yeah, the logo is awesome, man. You designed the logo yourself?
You know, I had a buddy I had, so when I got fired from Chico, I had, the only person I ever worked with was a student that, he's older than me, but he helped me out a lot and he helped with the logo. And the logo was like, I know that font had like come out after the fact and been used, but that was one of the first times that that was used. And we, like, if you look at old Otis Redding covers and stuff, it's basically right off that. And then the O is blown up. So it's not like super duper cool or original, but it was like, okay, I think definitely that was the mindset, was like, where has this been used before? And of course there's Otis elevators. So, you know, I didn't say elevate my sound or whatever.
But, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Kind of lame, but yeah. So that was where that came from. Thanks for asking that. No one ever asks that. I've never asked. No, I've never told that story about, well, I never do these. No one ever asked me to do these. So I guess I'm not really saying anything much, you know, probably talking about UFOs the whole time isn't going to help me get on other ones, but I really think it's rad. You guys are rad. You know, you're cool about talking about it.
It's very cool, man. I like the crossovers and the amps look amazing. I know you said you have some problems with flooding, man.
Yeah. Yeah. It rains here, which is great because, you know, it does not rain in California. Yeah, I've had it pretty easy. So if I get a flood or something like that, it's just another thing that kind of like, it's not a big deal. You know, it sucks. It sucks. But it's at the same time, like, I think it's cool. People have been patient with me and it made me grateful for the type of customers I have. And, you know, just fortunate to be able to do this kind of stuff at whatever capacity I can. And that people are interested in what I'm doing. I got to ask, have you ever seen a UFO or anything?
I saw gray silver balls in New York City, three of them circling and spreading out and going away. My father has seen one as well.
I have not.
So you guys want to hear, I'm pretty cool about this stuff, like talking about it because, well, first of all, like I've been talking about it for so long and then turns out like maybe I wasn't so crazy. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So when I was 10, and I'm apprehensive to talk about this a little bit because you don't really know what the implications are or whatever. And first of all, I want to preface this by saying I talk about stuff because I'm okay admitting that I'm wrong. You know, there's like no dogma with this stuff because like the first thing I ever saw was when I was really young playing kick the can on a cul-de-sac with my neighbors, a big old black pyramid flew over us. And in between like two houses on a cul-de-sac. And I was like 4 or 5 years old. And I only remember it because the older kids kept reminding me of it. Right. But, you know, one of our dads separated us into these rooms and had us all draw it. I got like the piss yellow crayon that looks like you drank too many Red Bulls or whatever. You know what I mean? So like I couldn't really draw it or whatever because it wasn't enough contrast with the paper. That was the first time I saw something, but when I was 10, I remember it was 10 because Pretty Fly for a White Guy had just come out. Nice. And it was, I was like, so anyone that's bought one of my amps, just to let you know, you've trusted your tone to someone that really liked Pretty Fly for a White Guy big time.
10 year old.
Yeah. That's still a pretty funny song. But we went to Italy because I was living in Poland. My dad taught and he did Fulbrights where you're like, you're a quasi ambassador and you teach at a foreign school. And we were coming back from Italy and I think it was in Germany. And I woke up in the middle of the night and I saw one of my parents being carried by four gray aliens. And they had their hands out like this, like in a motion that was like light as a feather, thin as a board. And it created a gurney. Like it looked like Luke Skywalker's lightsaber. Right. And I wake up in the middle of the night and there's like a comforter and the room was shaped like a Tetris L, like, you know, it in New York where the center of a building is hollowed out, like where there's a thing. So I saw these four aliens carry one of my parents and like put him back in bed. I'm trying to wake my brother up because there's two beds. One's facing that way and my parents are facing this way. You know, I take it seriously because there's certain things like when people talk about this that add up and like go to that experience. Like they were very jerky. You know, that's one thing that I've heard other people say, and that's how they moved, was very Wallace and Gromit-like. It was like claymation in that kind of way. It was very hard to tell what was going on when they got to the side of the bed, when they put one of my parents back in the bed, I remember being confused about, well, did they go through the sheet or like what the hell happened just then? Just trying to wake up my brother. He kept like leaning up and looking around, sort of half asleep. I don't know if he couldn't see them, which sort of like puts a little bit of doubt in my mind. Or I don't know if, you know, I don't know if he just didn't wake up, but they came back and like, they didn't go through walls or something like that. It was like an escape, like a fire escape, a catwalk. And so they're moving back and it's like gray alien stuff, right? Just like typical big eyes, whatever. And I'm just watching them, like looking over a comforter. And as they're exiting the window, the last one notices me looking at him. And his eyes squint up and the outer corners lift. And it just like put his hand out like this and it knocked me out. And it basically felt like I was like an ironing board that had been slammed down and just like thrown through the floor. And so, yeah, I take this stuff super seriously, you know? So when I do that, like, I know that might be nonsense and it could be complete bullshit or a dream. I don't think it is. And it sucks to like read ancient texts and hear about like, you know, them like eating your soul or some shit. Right. So I don't know the implications of it.
Yeah. None of the connotations are positive about these gray aliens. Usually it's always pretty negative.
You mean the connotations are usually negative?
Yeah. Like they're not the nefarious things is what I'm trying to say. They're not there to help you get through to the next level here.
They suck. My impression was that they were very different, indifferent. Like there was, right. I didn't necessarily, yeah. And like, I didn't smell anything or whatever like that, but like, I don't care, man. Like I'll tell anyone about that because once you're young and you've seen a pyramid fly up in the sky above you and then disappear and you had like four or five people there with you, you really can't rule out what they're capable of. You know, that could have just been like put in my mind. It could have not even happened. Like you just don't know. So for me, like, yeah, I try not to think about it so much, but just because we've talked about this, I think it's important. Like I'm cool just straight up saying that, like as someone that's somewhat functional and has a job and does this stuff that like, yeah, I think I saw something like that. You know, there's other things I could go on and on about, but it's even way, way weirder. Some of them sound like that Soul movie by Disney. So, you know, it's that kind of stuff, but.
Thank you for sharing that experience, man. That's like a serious experience, especially I can't imagine as a child being like obviously terrified of what's going on at that moment.
Well, I woke up and I asked my brother and he's just like, I didn't see anything. I don't know what you're talking about. At first he said, yeah, yeah. And then no, but no, it wasn't so much. I don't think it's like caused me any like trauma or something like that. You just sort of file it in the back of your head. Like it's not in your mind as you go through life.
So kind of too intuitive to what, you know, what we know reality to be that it's almost like you can't even process it at that point.
Yeah. I don't know, but I'm interested, man. I definitely listen and I don't like, I'm someone where I think it's important to have empathy. And if someone sounds like super crazy about like, I never called in the Coast to Coast or I never like, I'm not like super, this is the facts that happened to me. But if I had, and everyone called me nuts, like what happens when you tell your buddy to dump their girlfriend?
Right. They're like, we're not listening to this guy. He doesn't know what's going on. Yeah.
They, like when you challenge someone's beliefs, they worship harder. Right. So, you know, that's why with what's going on with disclosure, how it's so slow and how the videos are granular. I mean, I could keep going. I have more stories and more things I've seen. It's up to you guys if you want to listen to them. But the point is it makes sense to me that it's so slow and it's so data driven. And, you know, like the Tom DeLonge fellows making books and movies and art projects to subliminally kind of like get your mind rolling. And, you know, it's like the videos are blurry for a reason. They have clear pictures, you know, they have that stuff. So like,
It's yeah. a slow, yeah, it's a slowly like, you know, massaging culture into this idea of what's really going on, I guess. And there's, you know, there's been a series of documentaries as well as the U.S. Navy footage just in the last 2 or 3 years. Like you said, I mean, the narrative's completely flipped. 10 years ago, you wouldn't even imagine that people would be talking the way they are in mainstream media.
It also makes sense to do it gradually and slow, because a lot of time they talk about collective consciousness and basically how if we all sat around kumbaya and like prayed away global warming, it might work. Right. And if you probably the opposite could happen. If you like disclose all this bad stuff about it, you could get the world to panic and then we get like worse crap. So, it, you know, I don't know. I can't really say much about it. It all depends. But yeah, I think it's super rad that we got to talk about it.
Yeah, man. No, I'm happy to be a platform for it, man, for you. And I know you said you had a couple other models. I'm trying to channel in here to get you to release them, man. What's going on with those?
One is like a 10 water, and it was supposed to just like kind of replace the Trudeau in the wooden head, right? Because the Trudeau is like a lot going on for like a 9x9 box, right? So I ended up making it almost just as complicated. It's pretty cool. It's definitely inspired by the Gibson Ed Amp, you know, parallel single ended. The only thing is I have one version that has a master volume, and the master volume, I guess, is like kind of the unique thing I did besides like the stuff I always do in my amps that has like a, that kind of uses, it basically uses a phase inverter, but there's no need for a phase inverter because it's single ended. But it's used to like just as a differential amplifier to cancel the signal, just like a matchless master volume. So it's kind of like a matchless master volume, but in a single ended amp. And I still don't know if it's necessary because that amp sounds really good at low volumes. So I don't know if I'm going to employ that or whatever. So I'm making the decision on that because I thought sometimes I just think it was like cool that I got that to work, but I don't know how awesome it is. I'm working on a high gain amp. And you know, the metal front design, that was kind of going to be, something that I could build a little quicker and is a little bit more traditional. So yeah, those are coming up, but yeah, right now I just have to get caught up on orders. That's like my main thing is I'm behind, you know, so right. Just a couple, just like
that's
two,
not amp, bad.
Two, 3 amps. Yeah. But you know,
that's
just
not bad.
Yeah. It's, you know, you don't want to release a model when you owe stuff. At least I don't.
But for our listeners out there, the Trudeau is based on an old magnetone, pretty clean sounding, I guess, or Supro.
It's not,
not high gain.
When it started, it's not high gain. It's like medium gain. Yeah. When I started, the amp was basically like some amalgam of Supro, magnetone, and Fender, but it's changed over time.
Cool.
It's different now because you just get better at design. It's a balancing act, like how the preamp section works at the power section, how each stage cascades, do different things. So I wouldn't say it's like totally original, but it's definitely more original than it was. I'll tell you that. Yeah. So that's about it.
Hell yeah. So they're only getting better.
I think so. And I think they were good, you know, they were good in the beginning. Like I started out, I'm proud of like the stuff I did. And I definitely, I need to update my site, but like, I want to start except like if you have an Otis that's like older than 3 years, you should send it to me and I'll update it. Like, I want to start making that like something that I do, for people. So I'll definitely do that to my site.
So one, that's a really cool service, man.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know like you develop kind of like a personal relationship with some of your customers just because it takes a while to build the thing. You're talking about it, you're giving them updates. So it's more preventative. Do you know what I mean? But if like cars do it, why not? You know, I think if you're going to go on a trip and you can block out the time, send it to me while you're on your trip and I'll get it back to you when you're back, you know, that sort of a thing. But, yeah, it's cool. And really thanks a bunch for, having me on, you know, it's
hell yeah, man.
It's
happy
cool.
to have you.
Last thing I want to say, dude, is Freddie Cannon, Palisades Park. You ever listen to that song?
No.
I will.
You check that out. Yeah.
And then Freddie Cannon, Palisades Park. All right.
Yeah. If you want to hear some like happy music, like super happy, like the only type of music like it is that 7-Eleven commercial about nachos. And check that out. And yeah, basically that's someone, you know, the Beatles came in and killed his career. Yeah. So check that out. That's a goofy song.
All right. I will.
Will do, man.
Nice meeting you guys. And thanks for having me.
Definitely, dude.
Later, Max. Later, Brian. See ya.
And that concludes this week's edition of our interview series here at Sonic Artifacts. Remember to please hit the subscribe button on your favorite streaming platform.
And check out our interview series featuring builders and musicians from around the world. You can follow all the deals on our Instagram at Sonic_Artifacts and become a Sonic supporter over at Patreon.
That's right. Catch us every Tuesday for the best deals in affordable vintage music equipment in Los Angeles and New York City. This is your host, Brian Chalemi, signing off from LA.
And your co-host, Max Braun, signing off from Brooklyn.